My name is Elise, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi. This is an open meeting of the Atlantic Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all are welcome to attend. It is our belief that our meeting structure is necessary to maintain the integrity of the group so that it may better carry the message of AA, and since the most important aspect of AA recovery is one alcoholic relating to another, only alcoholics participate. If your primary problem is other than alcoholism, we think that it would also be helpful for you to contact an anonymous organization which more specifically deals with your addiction. Our literature persons, Phil and Dino, have the list of such groups with their phone numbers. In any case, we hope that what you learn here may be helpful to your recovery and or understanding. Leah will read the preamble.
Thank you. Hi, my name's Leah, and I'm an alcoholic. AA Preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, nor endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Please join me in the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Chris will read the steps.
Hi, everybody. Chris, alcoholic. The 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. One, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we have harmed and had become willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for the knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had that spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. Thanks.
Therese will read the traditions.
Hi there, I'm Therese. I'm an alcoholic. The 12 traditions. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. Four, each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Six, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Eight, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
The format of this meeting is 2 10-minute speakers, followed by our information break, and then our main speaker, who will speak for 30 minutes. Our first 10-minute speaker is Dave.
Hi, my name is Dave, and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is June 4th, 2005. My sponsor is James. My home group is the Atlantic Group, and we're currently working steps 9 through 12. I wanted to thank Jero for asking me to speak, and it's definitely a privilege to be up here and to be asked to speak, and really I just hope that out of the 400 some odd people here, you know, maybe one person can identify with my story or say, hey, you know, if he did this and that worked, maybe I'll give it a shot, or if he did that and it didn't work, maybe I'll just take his word for it, because that's what's been beneficial to me too, you know, hearing other people speaking at meetings as well. So very briefly, I want to go through what it was like for me drinking. Really wasn't that exciting. You know, I drank, it got consequences. Had a pretty normal childhood, loving family, you know. Grew up in upstate New York. We weren't rich, we weren't poor. Didn't have bottles flying around the house or anything else really dramatic. You know, nothing I can really point out and say, well, that drove me to drink, or, you know, that's why I'm an alcoholic or what. When I got drunk for the first time, I was 16, and, you know, I knew the opportunity was presenting itself at, you know, a friend's party, and, you know, I decided to drink just because, well, I don't know, I wanted to see what it was all about. You know, I wanted to have a different experience. Didn't know what it was like, you know, and it was kind of a different group of people, and, you know, so when that happened, when I drank, and granted, I didn't black out, I didn't really have any kind of belligerent drunkenness, I just remember feeling awesome. And that feeling really was more that feeling of acceptance and kind of being in with a new crowd. And that was really kind of that feeling that got me out of myself that I would chase for a while longer. Because I had always felt a little bit uncomfortable inside myself. I didn't really know or could put my finger on it at the time why that was. You know, through working the steps in my sobriety, I later found out that was my alcoholism and manifested through my defects of character. Namely fear and, you know, self-pity and pride and all that other, you know, fun stuff we get to deal with here. So, you know, that was really it. And this is my story is I drank, you know, it felt great for a little while. I got consequences, got caught with my family here and there. You know, when I moved off to college, I drank even more because I had freedom. It was awesome, right? I got to kind of erase who I was in the past and become the new Dave, the new me, right? The hip kid, and, you know, on your floor freshman year, like that. That's what I wanted to be, and it really wasn't that exciting. You know, I remember, you know, through my drinking, right? I really lost contact with a lot of my family. I distanced myself purposely. My friends were only friends that really did the same things that I was doing, and I had gotten great grades in school previous to that, and all of a sudden I'm on academic probation, right? So there is a direct relationship between my drinking and my performance there. So I remember that, you know, really most of all, I just felt that feeling of emptiness, kind of that feeling of kind of impending doom when I was just kind of on my own, and I didn't like that. So, but I kept going, right? That's all I knew. And eventually the consequences caught up to me, and I was told that by my parents that I either need to go off to rehab or find another place to live, another way to pay for my tuition, another way to kind of fend for myself. So begrudgingly, I weighed my options and went to rehab. And there, right, I went and I was like, I don't really identify. I'm not going to be fitting with these people. I'm not as bad as they are. I'm not really an alcoholic. But when I showed up, I found out that I did identify with a lot of these people, and, you know, we did have a similar story, and it was there that we had a guest speaker come in, you know, a young guy like myself that had been there a year or two previous. He told his story, kind of like I'm doing now, and I just identified. You know, I did the same things he did. You know, our circumstances may have been a little different, but ultimately, he got to a point kind of where I felt I was at the time, and he kept going. He kept drinking, and he got more consequences. He got kicked out of his house. I knew that was going to come from me. And ultimately, you know, he got to a place much more worse off. So I kind of made a decision there. Well, maybe there is something to this, you know, these 12 steps, this AA thing. So why don't I just give it a shot? What do I have to lose? You know, I can always drink if I want to. So that's kind of how I got started, and, you know, I've been fortunate to be sober since. You know, when I got out, I got a sponsor, started going to meetings, and that's what I did. You know, a good friend of mine has kind of his own saying, saying, you know, meeting makers make meetings, and I made meetings. And I kind of sprinkled in a step or two here and there, but really all in all, the first two and a half years of my sobriety, you know, I stayed sober, life got a little better, I made meetings, you know, I did a little bit of step work, but I kind of curtailed off, right? I wasn't really calling my sponsor every day. I wasn't, you know, going to meetings and looking for the newcomer and trying to help someone. I wasn't really, you know, doing all of those, these practices that I've, you know, since learned. And, you know, so I got to a point where I wasn't really feeling too comfortable where I was at, you know? And I, at that same time, I kind of started to see the growth in a lot of my peers, a lot of my friends that were a member of this home group and had started to work the 12 steps out of this book right here as it's laid out. And I figured, well, why don't I just give that a shot, right? I need to do something, right? Either like this right now, I'm either going to go drink or I'm going to, you know, do something bad. It's not going to end up good if I don't have, you know, all 12 steps. I had 1 through 5 at that time. So I got a new sponsor, started coming here. I worked the steps, and I really, really got these principles into my life, you know. And step one for me, when I first did it, it was difficult because I didn't identify with a lot of the classic, I don't know, AA consequences of the story. And, you know, for me, I really saw the unmanageability first, manifested in, you know, how my relationships were, you know, the cleanliness of all my possessions, you know, my academic performance and all that. So I kind of identified with through the unmanageability, I found my powerlessness over alcohol and really everything else that I'm powerless over in this world. And step two for me, I really, you know, I learned that, you know, this void, this feeling of uncomfortability, that feeling of impending doom I had, right, when I tried to fill it with alcohol, you know, now I can fill with something else, fill with, you know, a higher power that can, you know, help set me straight. And, you know, step three was just really making a commitment to do that for me. And it was really, you know, step four and five, it really wasn't that scary, to be honest. And I kind of got to see where I was and, you know, how my defects manifested, you know. Where was I full of fear, you know, how many resentments I had. And, you know, and step six and seven was really powerful for me, because I really got to take a look at all my defects and consciously take these opposite actions, you know, where I was inconsiderate, I would go out of my way in the morning to be considerate, right? Whether it's holding a door, you know, stopping to the bus driver and saying, hello, how you doing today? When it was envy, you know, I would, you know, maybe give someone a genuine compliment, you know, I'd kind of go out of my way. And by doing that, I was able to break that cycle of, you know, all these kind of, these defects, right, these this fear, this pride, this, you know, self-pity, this self-centeredness that was really holding on to me and really wasn't bringing me to a place of growth. And steps 8 and 9 were, you know, pretty, you know, I learned how to take responsibility for my own actions. I learned how to step up and say, hey, you know, I did, it's me. You know, what can I do? What can I do to make it right, you know? And it's not always easy, but it's something I continue to do. And, you know, 10, 11, 12 is really where I get to grow, right? Because a big thing for me, when I first got sober, I didn't come here. I didn't, you know, start doing this to stop drinking. I didn't want to stop drinking. You know, if I had the option today, I probably would. But I came here to grow. I wanted to grow. I wanted to kind of expand my life a little bit, you know. And to do that, I learned that the only way to do that successfully, through my experience, through the 12 steps, you know, coming to meetings and doing fellowship is awesome, but I didn't grow through that. You know, I got to meet other people that were kind of doing those things, and that's kind of how I got to be connected here. But for me, you know, going to meetings is not really the solution. But doing this work, right, living this program of action, and really following my higher power is where it's at, in my experience here. And real quickly, I want to talk about kind of how I came to have a relationship with my higher power. It kind of says a lot of that in the book. I got 1 minute, so we'll do it quickly here. So, you know, when I was in rehab, I listened to someone else said, well, my higher power is my brother. He kind of passed away from a disease a while ago, and I kind of looked to him for some guidance because I didn't really understand how there could be a God that, you know, overseeing everything in the world, but also very personal to me and to you and to you and you and you. So I kind of chose to be my grandmother, someone that, you know, I knew had some personal love to me. So that worked for me for a while. And then now I kind of just roll with it and I just call God. You know, whatever it is, there's something out there, something that moves the chemistry of the earth that makes things in my life way better than I could ever make them. And today I really have an awesome life. I have some amazing opportunities I've had. I've gotten to travel. I've got to experience some wonderful things with my family, with my friends here in New York. I've got to visit all the cultures and really go, you know, I have a job. I graduated from college. I have all these amazing things, and it's all because of what you've all taught me here in AA. So thank you very much for asking me to speak.
Our second 10-minute speaker is Liz.
Thanks. Hi, I'm Liz. I'm an alcoholic. Just give you my stats. My sobriety date is June 12th, 2008. My sponsor is Randy. The Atlantic Group is my home group, and I'm working on 9, living in 10, 11, 12. It's an honor to speak here. The Atlantic Group has changed my life in so many ways. I guess I'll start what happened and what it was like and what's like now. I grew up in a family of five, and I was the second oldest. I always felt this feeling that you hear a lot in the rooms, but I thought it was the only one, was that I had a lot of worry and fear all throughout my childhood. I was always in my head, and I thought that was normal. I was always felt like I was missing out on something. I was less than. I wasn't getting enough. You know, I was getting the short end of the stick. When I got to college, I pretty much picked up drinking right away, I really needed that first drink because I just felt like on my own I wasn't good enough. You know, drinking gave me what I thought was that I needed. I was funny, and I was able to socialize. I could talk to boys. I could, you know, make people laugh, make people comfortable. I thought everyone wanted me to be this happy, drunk person, and 'cause I didn't like who I was normally, and that's who I wanted to be. Anything to get out of myself, and it pretty much progressed right away. I was a blackout drinker. From the first time, and I didn't mind that. I didn't mind not remembering the night because I felt like my life on its own wasn't that exciting. But when I got out and there was some drama, you know, I liked that. Like, I felt like blacking out kind of gave me a way out of life. Like, I didn't have to take responsibility for any of my actions. Pretty much school came second. It was what happened between drinking. I had a pretty low GPA, and I did just enough to get by. I mean, I graduated through the grace of God, but I was still exactly the same person as I was when I started. I did not have any life skills, I didn't know where to go. I pretty much, you know, kept doing the same thing, but then I realized that, you know, other people were growing up, that, you know, the kind of fun had ended, and people were doing different things now, and I wasn't ready for any of that. I wanted to keep going out and blacking out and hanging out and, you know, and not really, you know, getting a stable job or a relationship or anything like that. I got older, you know, fast forward, I was in a relationship, and I pretty much caused my husband a lot of pain, and my family being just, you know, selfish and inconsiderate when I was drunk. And I started, you know, to think that maybe there was something wrong with my drinking. I was seeing a therapist, and she suggested to me that I try to go out and have just three drinks. And, you know, that sounded easy to me. I'd never done it before, but it sounded easy. And I tried it, and, you know, every time I went out, there was an excuse, you know, that someone gave me a free shot, and, you know, I had it was someone's birthday, or it was my birthday, or it was Friday, you know. So I was just like, I told her, I was just like, I'm having some trouble with this. I don't know why. And she told me to check out an AA meeting, and I did in 2001, and I actually came to this meeting. I sat in the back, you know, I think behind one of the podiums or one of the poles, and I couldn't see anything, and I had huge resentment the whole time, and I was like, oh, when they get the speakers finished speaking, I'm going to tell them exactly what I think of this meeting, you know, but if this meeting you can't talk, so I walked out. I realized that, you know, I was like, oh, I had some more drinking to do because I wasn't ready to surrender. I definitely did not want what anyone had, and I tried my best to figure out how I was different, and I was different in a lot of ways from every speaker, you know, because they were a boy and I was a girl, or, you know, they were rich and I was, you know, middle class, and there was anything I would use as an excuse to get out of it, to get out of any identification. So then I continued drinking, and things progressed. You know, I wasn't an everyday drinker. I never was. I was a binge drinker. I never could go out and have just one or two drinks. I always got this feeling in the pit of my stomach that said, you know, tonight can be anything you want. And, you know, like, who knows where it's going to take you. And, you know, just forget about everything else. And I did. And then I would suffer severe consequences. I would get very depressed after drinking. And, you know, sometimes I wouldn't get out of bed for 2 days. But I had a short-term memory. Like, I would forget all that stuff when the weekend came around. I was in another program, and I talked about my going out and getting drunk with my family, and I just felt like, you know, why does this keep happening? I was like crying, and I was so upset, and, you know, because I had just embarrassed myself, and it just felt like this is the last time, you know, and I just said, but I have nothing, you know, no other way of living. And someone suggested going to AA meeting, and I was like, no, I went there, you know, it didn't work for me. That didn't really work. And she was like, well, just try it out. And I ended up coming here in December 2005. And, you know, there was a lot of young people, there was a lot of women, there was a lot of, you know, people just like me. And so I thought that was all right, you know, and I decided to stay. I got a sponsor right away, but, you know, working the steps and living in the solution was hard. I had a lot of anger, basically, and I was just angry, like, at everything. You know, I was angry if I was alone, I was angry if I was with someone. You know, I wasn't willing to take suggestions. Like, I would listen and say, okay, but then they say, read pages 86 to 88. And I was, okay, I will. I have the big book right here. I wouldn't read them. And I just, you know, turn on the TV or go and take a nap and think that was going to take away my difficulties. Basically, you know, I was sober, for 2.5 years. And then last year, I was still looking for a solution, you know, that wasn't a spiritual solution. So I went to a doctor, I went to a few doctors, and was looking for a prescription for something that I didn't have. But I thought, you know, this is what I've been missing my whole life. Like, this pill is going to make me feel better, and, you know, I'll be more creative, I'll be more, you know, like, a lot of hopes and dreams were going to come through true with this pill. And it didn't, and I got honest with my sponsor, and that was so hard because I did not want to start counting days again.
I was really angry at this program. I was angry at everyone here. I was embarrassed, and I wanted to leave. And I kind of did leave a little bit. I mean, I went to meetings like twice a week and didn't do any of the steps, didn't do service. I was in a lot of pain, and it was really awful. I realized that wasn't working for me, and I told someone, you know, that I was thinking of leaving, and, you know, she kind of talked me out of it. She talked me down and said that, you know, things don't have to be like that, and I realized she was right. I started working with a new sponsor and really working with the program, like not just talking about it. You know, I turn over 10. I talk to my sponsor every day. I don't have to live things my way. You don't have to be in pain anymore. And, I see people here that are, you know, totally examples for me. And, I want what they have. And, to anyone here who's new or just coming back, you know, it's possible. You don't have to identify with everything. You just have to, you know, identify with a few things and stay. Thank you.
Our main speaker tonight is Bob.
Hi, everybody. My name is Bob Weinstein. I'm an alcoholic. And I'm absolutely delighted to be here. It's a wonderful place to be. This is sort of my home away from home. I've been here a lot of times, and I just love this place. When Heidi called me up to come, it made my heart jump. It was nice. And then she went through a litany of about 20 minutes of what I have to do and what I should do and what I have to wear and what I... And I'm not wearing sneakers, and I'm dressed appropriately, and she told me that I'm not even allowed to abbreviate if I'm going to curse. I can't. I have to use all the right words. So I figured out everybody loves Labrador puppies. So if I think of something nasty to say, what I'm going to say instead is Labrador puppies, and you'll all get the idea, and that's got to be totally acceptable. What I was like, what happened, and what I'm like now. What I was like was I was a fall-down, puking drunk. What happened was I had a moment of clarity. And what I am like now is I am a citizen. Thank you. Okay, I'll expand a little bit. I got sober in Thousand Oaks, California, but I am originally from Brooklyn, New York. I don't get that kind of applause out in California. Grew up in Brooklyn, and my life was good for the most part. I come from a middle-class family, and nobody in my family was alcoholic. Nobody had any problems with it. As a matter of fact, I just lost my mother last August, and she had 92 years of sobriety. What a hell of a cake she could have had, huh? It just wasn't in my family, and we had other problems. I mean, people did things and everything like that, but I didn't even know about alcoholism. I had never heard of alcoholism. I didn't know what it was, and all I know is when I was a kid and we were running around, all of a sudden we'd go into somebody's house and we'd have a little bit of something, and it made me feel so good. It just made me feel so good. I felt like a better person. I felt like I was whole. My life was, it just blossomed. It was like the color coming out in The Wizard of Oz. It just, my life seemed perfect after I drank. And I didn't get drunk. I didn't get drunk, but it just seemed so good. It felt so good. And that's what I did. By the time I was in high school, I was drinking every day. I wasn't drunk every day, but I was drinking every day, and my life seemed to work. I had problems. I kept getting called to the dean's office. I kept getting called to the principal's office. They always wanted to talk to me and to my parents and say wonderful things like Bob, you know, you can do things. You can do things better. You have such an aptitude. You have potential. You have thing, you know. And I look, I was sober about 6 years when I realized the only people they tell that have potential are people who aren't doing anything. Nobody ever gets told they have potential if they're doing things. And they call me in there. One time I was sitting in the boys dean's office, and I remember him writing this book. It's probably floating somewhere around the Brooklyn somewhere in the Board of Education. It says, shows an inability to learn from past experience. Now I could really sit down. Truth, because that's my story. I never had the ability to learn from past experience. It was unbelievable, but I didn't know that then. I'd get into trouble, but the fact of the matter is I had a good aptitude at taking tests, and I did well, and I graduated from high school, and I got a scholarship to a major university here in New York, and it was wonderful. There I was, on full scholarship, and I'm going to this school, and I went into this school, and I started majoring in the thing that I loved best, fraternity. Because, well, fraternity had the liquor, and it had the beer, and it had the girls, and it had everything that I wanted. And I really didn't need anything else out of that university. But they were insisting that I do more, and that I take more, and that I take classes, and I happened to do well. I got on Dean's List that first year that I was there, and my life was working. As a matter of fact, I was on Dean's List and disciplinary probation. And how I did that, I don't know. But again, that's my story. I finished that first year, and my parents were absolutely thrilled. They were thrilled. I was the first one in my household ever to go to college. As a matter of fact, I was the first one ever to graduate from high school, and they loved that. They loved the fact that I was there, and they knew that somehow, some way, I was going to be a professional. I'll be a doctor, or I'll be an attorney, or I'll be an accountant, or I'll be an engineer, or something. They had all this, and they looked up to me, and it was wonderful. The only thing is, I didn't get it. I never could seem to get it, and I never knew what was going on, and I had this offer that I just couldn't pass up. It was just too much. I mean, it meant everything to me. So I decided to quit this university and leave my full scholarship and become a mambo dancer in the Catskill Mountains of New York. Hey, don't laugh. It was good. It was showbiz. You know, I got to wear a tuxedo every day, and I got to do the things I wanted to do. I got to learn about substances other than alcohol, and by this time I was drinking every day, and I was getting drunk, and I was getting into trouble because they didn't like the way I was showing up, and I all of a sudden I couldn't keep the rhythm, and I just couldn't do what they wanted me to do. One day I walked up and I couldn't find the audience. They weren't there. And they told me they're going to have to let me go. And I didn't want that to happen. And I said I'd change. You see, we used to drink every night. We used to do things every night. And I never quite got that they stopped. It just didn't register to me. As I said, I don't come from an alcoholic home. I don't come from anything that tells me I have an allergy of the body and an obsession of the mind. All I know is that I don't stop. And I didn't even realize that. I couldn't learn. And now I'm getting fired, and I don't like to get fired. I don't want to get fired. I love this job. So I said, I'll fix them. I know the only reason I drank was because of the fact that I was in show business. And now I'll go back. I'll do the right thing, and I'll go back to school, and I'll get myself a job, and I'll be a good son, and I'll do the right thing. But I couldn't do the right thing. Somehow, some way, I just kept getting into trouble. I loved to have that drink. I needed to have that drink. That drink did things for me that nothing else could do. And I knew that. And the only reason I needed to drink was because I needed other things. I needed a boss who understood me. I needed parents that understood me. I needed a job that would pay a little more. I needed a better car. And if I could get those things, I would stop drinking. It was only because those things were in my mind that I needed that. And it wasn't the fact that I had any other problem. Then it became stress. stress. People want me to do things. People want me to pay bills. People want to meet. And I don't like that. I get real upset. So I drink. And it made me feel better, and I didn't care. And I go in the bar, and everybody understood me in the bar. All my friends were in the bar. And that's the way it worked. And my life seemed to be going okay, except for the fact that I couldn't do the things that I needed to do. And I couldn't figure out why. Shows an inability to learn from past experience. I couldn't figure out why. Why was all this happening to me? It doesn't happen to anybody else. Whew, I need a drink. It's just the way my life was. Just the way my life was. Now I'm going out and I'm doing things and I'm not working very hard because I keep getting let go, and I meet this beautiful woman and she's really nice to me, and we get together and one night we go out and she gets drunk and I get drunk and she's the girl of my dreams. That Labrador puppy never drank again. And it was a rough marriage, I got to tell you, because she wanted me to stop too. And I didn't realize that's the way we're supposed to live. All I get now is she doesn't understand me. Another reason to drink. So I'm out every night, I'm going out and I'm having fun, and I go to a bar and I promise I'm going to be home for dinner, because that's the way you do it when you're married. And all of a sudden, I'm in there and the band is starting to play, and I go, what the heck? I'm going to stay for one set and then I'm going to leave. And next thing I know, the band is packing up and I got a problem, and now I got to get home. And she's looking at me with disgust. And one day I go home and she's having kids, and I don't understand this because I'm never home. And that's more stress on me, and they're leaning on me, and everybody wants things from me. They're asking me for things, and I need a drink. I can't handle that stuff. I have problems. Still, I don't know that I'm an alcoholic. Still, I don't know that I have a problem. I can't get anything about the disease of alcoholism because I don't understand that. Nobody ever explained it to me. And if you would have told me, I would have told you no. I don't have that. I have problems. That's the way it was. I remember when I first got here, if the first step was that my life was unmanageable, I could have handled that. Could have handled that. My life was unmanageable. But I don't know that I could have handled the fact that I was an alcoholic. I didn't say I was an alcoholic when I got here. Because I wasn't. I just needed some changes in my life. And slowly but surely, I got to learn that I was an alcoholic. Things were going on, and my wife said she wasn't going to take this anymore, and we have to do something. We have to change our lives. We have to do something. So we figured out the best thing we could do is to move to California. Well, really? It's healthy there. You guys don't know. You live here, but it's healthy there. We don't have humidity. And we go to California. And where I think it's going to be healthy, where I think I'm going to do the right things, I'm going to eat vegetables and salads and go to juice bars, you know. And I meet the same sleazy people at the same sleazy bars doing the same thing, and we're doing it over and over and over again. Buy Bob a drink. Oh, that's my favorite thing. You know, that's what I get to hear. And I love it. And they understand, they know what's going on, because we all have the same story. You know, and I'm sitting with all these major people, major film producers and major astronauts and major, I don't know, that's what they told me, you know, and they're not working either. So we all have plenty of time. And I go home, and I get this look of disgust at home, and the kids are afraid of me, and the only one who loves me is the dog. Oh, God, I love that dog. Dog jumping all over me. I love you, I love you, I love you. You know, he's the only one that would fawn on me. And it would be sad because in the morning I didn't know what to do, and every morning I'd get up and I'd swear that this is going to change. And I meant it. I meant it from the bottom of my heart to my soul. I meant it. It's going to change today. I'm not going to drink anymore. I'm going to go out and get a job. They're going to be proud of me. I mean, my father was my hero. He used to work every day. He used to come home. He was a great dad. I looked up to him. He did everything for us. He made a living and he paid the rent and he was wonderful and he was a good dad. And that's what I wanted to do. I'd promise I'd be home and I wouldn't be home. I'd promise I'd do things for the kids and I wouldn't do that. That's not true. I became a scoutmaster in Thousand Oaks. I became a scoutmaster so the kids could see that I could be there. And I didn't drink when we would go away for a weekend. If we went on an overnight hike, I didn't drink. And we did that. And I proved, that was my proof that I wasn't an alcoholic, that I didn't have a problem. It was my proof. And I remember one day, the Baltimore Orioles had won the World Series. And Rick Dempsey, who was the catcher at that time, was living in Thousand Oaks. And he was going to speak to a group of us at the scout meeting. And it was at a Catholic church. And all of a sudden, the entire church showed out to see Rick Dempsey. And I'm supposed to introduce Rick Dempsey. And I'm in my little scout shorts. And I had long socks with little tassels. And a neckerchief, and my hat was tucked nicely in my belt, and I go right to the front, right like this, to introduce Rick Dempsey, and I fall flat on my face off the stage. And all they did was they picked me up, put me in a chair, and somebody else introduced them. Nobody ever said to me that maybe you have a problem. I didn't get to hear that. I didn't get to hear that. So what happens is now I'm doing whatever I please, knowing that everything is going wrong. My wife is getting sick of me. She wants to leave me, and she comes to me one day, and she says, I'm filing for divorce. I can't handle this anymore. I've told you many times. I said, please. I didn't want her to go. I loved her. I love her. I love my children. Don't do this. This will ruin my life. I don't know what to do. I promise you I'll get better. I promise you I'll get better. And she says, okay. Whoa, close call. So I was good. I was good for one day. I was good for 2 days. By the third day, I have stress. All I want is one. Maybe two. And then I'll be okay. I don't know I can't do one or two. I can't get it. Again, shows an inability to learn from past experience. I can't do one or two. God, that feels good going down. So I have more and more and more. And next thing I know, she's leaving me again. And I beg her and I beg her, and please stay, and she stays. And I'm not good after that. I go out and I get drunk, and she's leaving again. And this time she leaves. She takes the kids and she leaves. And the only thing I know to do is to go to that bar. Where all my friends are, all the major bankers and the, you know, all the big people that I know. And we're sitting there, and they're buying me drinks. If I would have known they were going to buy me that many drinks, I might have done this before. But we're just doing it. We're just doing it. And I go home, and there's nobody there. And it's hard to handle. And now I don't even have to make believe I'm going to go get a job anymore. I don't have to make believe that I'm going to stop drinking. I just keep getting up, and I keep getting drunk, and I keep coming home, and my life is turning to Labrador puppies. And I got to do something. And just then I get a call that I have a son who's having a problem. He's having a problem, and we need to take care of this. And I said, of course, I'll do whatever you want. You know, she said, my wife says, there's a meeting on Wednesday nights, and if you'll come to the meeting, it's a program right here in Thousand Oaks, and there's a meeting on Wednesday nights. If you'll come to that meeting, it's a parents' meeting, they'll take care of him for whatever we have to do. It's an outpatient program. So I said, of course I'll come. Of course I'll come. I mean, I want to be there for my kid. He's my younger kid, and I got to do something. And so I start showing up. start showing up. And I'm there every Wednesday night, and sometimes I'm sober and sometimes I'm not, but I'm there. And they start telling me things that I never heard, things about alcoholism and things about how we have to do things and how you have to come to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I had seen movies that had Alcoholics Anonymous in it, like Days of Wine and Roses and Come Back Little Sheba and everything, and I never remembered the Alcoholics Anonymous in those movies. It was after I got sober and I saw those movies, I said, wow, they added that stuff just for me. And they're talking about all these things. They're talking about all these things. And I'm starting to listen. I'm just hoping that Josh gets it, because I didn't get that I had it. And one day, Josh comes over to visit me at my house where I'm living, because they're gone. They're not living there. And Josh comes over to visit me at the house. And he comes over in the afternoon. And he caught me taking my afternoon nap on the floor of the bedroom, because I couldn't quite make the bed. And I'm lying there, and I remember him looking down, and he said, Daddy's hammered again. Daddy's hammered again. And I don't know why, but I heard it that time. I heard it. You talk about a moment of clarity. That was my moment of clarity. I had so many things that happened, and so many people told me I had a problem, and I didn't believe them. Several weeks before, I'd been in a town called Anniston, Alabama, okay, which is a dry town, trying to sell something just so I can make some money. And I couldn't find a liquor store that was open that night. I went down where they had a buffet in one of the rooms, and I stole two cans of Sterno, and I strained that through a sweat sock so I'd have something to drink, and I couldn't get that I was an alcoholic. And he said, Daddy's hammered again. And I heard it. I heard it. He helped me up, and we started talking, and took me back to where he was living, so I could wash up. You see, I lived in a house in Thousand Oaks, which was one of my excuses for not having to be an alcoholic. I mean, it's a beautiful area, and I'm living in a house in Thousand Oaks with no electricity and no phone, and they had turned off the water, and I'm just living there. What I had done was created a skid row of my own right there in Thousand Oaks. And I couldn't get that I was an alcoholic. And he takes me back to his house, and I wash my face, and I wash up, and we call Alcoholics Anonymous up there. And I asked if there was a meeting tonight, and they said there was. And they asked me if I had a way of getting there. And I said, yeah, I can get there. And I went to the meeting. I'll never forget that meeting. Called the Oaks folks. It's still around today. Matter of fact, I go to that meeting. I'm standing outside, and I hear people laughing, and I'm watching them doing all kinds of things, and I said, you know, I'll start tomorrow. This isn't going to work for me. And I turn around to leave, and this guy grabs me. He says, hey, how you doing? Just what I need. Your first meeting? How the hell did he know? Yeah. And he says, my name is Otto, and he shook my hand, and he took me inside, and he got me a half a cup of coffee. And I sat there. I sat there, and people kept coming over to me, and people kept giving me their names and phone numbers and everything. And then they gave me a book, a meeting book with their names and phone numbers and everything. And nobody had a last name. I couldn't understand this. Not one woman. God, it was terrible. It was terrible. And I'm looking around, and I'm trying to see things. And at that time, everybody smoked at meetings. You couldn't see anybody from here up. There was just a big smoke. I thought that was the anonymous part of Alcoholics Anonymous. They said, if you're new and you have less than 30 days, please give us the name. Please give us your name and your disease. Your disease. I'm Bob, and I'm a leper. Give us your name and your disease, and we do this not to embarrass you, but so that we can get to know you better at the break. See, they had breaks at the break and at the end of the meeting, you know. And I found out later they really do it to embarrass you, but what the heck, you know. But I wasn't going to stand up. I wasn't going to stand up, but Otto goosed me. And I stood up and I said, my name is Bob and I'm a... It's about what came out, you know. And I sat down and the meeting went on. I remember at the end of the meeting, Otto said, you need a ride home? And I said, oh, thank you. And Otto drove me home and he had this big Lexus and he already had something I wanted. And he drove me home, and we didn't even talk about Alcoholics Anonymous. And he takes me to my door, and he says, by the way, he says, I'll pick you up tomorrow at 7, I think it was, or at 6, whenever it was, doesn't matter. He says, I'll pick you up tomorrow, and we'll go to a meeting. And I don't know why, but I said, okay. And as he's driving away, he says, you know what? Try not to drink between meetings. And for some reason, I didn't drink between meetings. And he picked me up at 7 o'clock that night, and we went to a meeting. And the following night, he drives me home. He says, you know what? Tomorrow night, we'll go to a meeting. So the following night, he picked me up, and we went to a meeting. Night after that, I went to a meeting with Otto. Night after that, I think Otto took me out to dinner, and then we went to a meeting. And then the night after that, Otto picked me up, and we went to a meeting. And the reason I keep bringing that up is because with all the names that I had and with all the phone numbers I had, I would never have called any. I don't do that. I don't need you. And Otto kept taking me to meetings. And I don't know that I'd be sober today if it weren't for Otto. Because he picked me up and he took me to meetings. And now that's what I get to do. Because I know the people I meet are people like me, who don't call anybody else. Besides, I had no phone. How was I going to call anyway? So now I start going to meetings and I start doing things and everything else and life is getting better and I got myself a sponsor and I'm working hard. I'm working real hard and I'm trying to do the things that I need to do. And I'm working the steps and I have commitments and I'm cleaning ashtrays and I'm sweeping up and I'm setting chairs and I'm doing all kinds of stuff. And then right about a year after I was sober, I got a call from a friend here, and he said, why don't you come back to New York? I got a job for you where you make a lot of money, and you'll do well. You'll do well. And I said, thank you, and I came back here because my family was gone. I thought they were lost forever, and I came back here. And I came back here, and I moved to Bayonne, New Jersey. And I had been told by my sponsor to just get up and go to a meeting and raise your hand and say, I need help. And I went to a meeting, and I raised my hand, and I said, I need help, and they gathered around me, and they took good care of me. And it was scary at first. We were talking about going, somebody was talking about different meetings before, and I didn't like those meetings. Hi, how are you? I didn't like those meetings. They had hour meetings. We had hour and a half meetings. You know, they called me California Bob. I was born in Brooklyn, in Bayonne, New Jersey. I'm living in Bayonne, New Jersey. They're calling me California Bob. You know, I found out later they only needed hour meetings because they talk so much quicker. I mean, let's face it. You know, you can get five more people in to share the way they share. But the meetings were wonderful, and the people took good care of me. And I met my sponsor there, the sponsor that really made Alcoholics Anonymous what it was to me, a fellow by the name of Joe Ryan, who had 38 years of sobriety. He had spoken at Bill Wilson's 20th anniversary, and he was an incredible man. And I just went around with Ryan. Whatever Ryan told me to do, I did. He was wonderful. It was wonderful being with him. And I did it, and I did it, and I did it, and I kept getting better. My life seemed to be wonderful. Whatever I did seemed to work all of a sudden. And it was just great. Ryan was very special to me. He was a wonderful man. And what I got to do, he was the first one that made me speak. And he was the first one that got me to sponsor somebody. And he was, and I'm still sponsoring that guy, by the way. When I got sober, it was February 21st, 1988. I want you to know that. I sponsored somebody in Bayonne. I'm sponsoring him 19 years now. And he's sober. this idiot who couldn't learn anything was sponsoring somebody and sponsoring him 19 years, and he's sober. And he's very active in Bayonne, and he's a good guy. And my life was working. At the end of a couple of years, Ryan says to me, he says, you gotta go back. You got to try and make amends with your family. You got to try and get your family back together. And I talked to my sons a little bit. I talked to my wife a little bit, but I didn't know what was going to happen. And I went back, and there was just too much garbage under the bridge for me to make anything happen with my wife, although we're very close friends now, which is nice. But I got my kids to trust me again. I got my kids to love me. My life is working. My life is absolutely working with them. They're good kids, and I have grandchildren, and I adore my grandchildren. They own me. They absolutely own me. I crawl on the floor with them. I do whatever they want. My life is good. Just the other day, I was over at my son's house, and my grandson comes down, and he's 4 years old, and he's ready to get in the bath, and he comes down, and he says, "Grandpa, look at me. I have no clothes." I said, "Big deal. I did that when I was 40. You know, but I love these kids. I love these kids, and I'd only have this life if because of Alcoholics Anonymous. I wouldn't have it any other way. I had to work the steps and do the work and do everything and realize that I suffered from a disease called alcoholism. And that's why everything is okay today. This year wasn't a wonderful year. I got to tell you, it's not. You don't just have rainbows. I mean, I lost my mother this year. I lost my job this year. They just closed. After 17 years, they just put the key in the lock and said, "Bye, Bob." Lost my job this year. Not too long ago, I had two small strokes. It's been a rough year. But my life is wonderful, and it's wonderful because of the fact that I have Alcoholics Anonymous. Because right now, with everything that happened, well, I wouldn't have had that job. Secondly, I wouldn't have the kids that love me. Third of all, I don't know if I would have realized I had strokes because I'd still be crawling around under a bar stool if I was still alive. So my life is good. If you're new, I beg of you, please keep coming back. Keep coming back. You know, we hear, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Well, I got to tell you, and I'm far from being an old-timer, but in all the years I've been here, anybody that I've ever seen that has thoroughly followed our path has stayed here and stayed sober. And that's what we get to do. We get to stay here and stay sober. Just do a few small things. Pick up that package of tools and work those steps and do the right thing. And I promise you a better life. Thank you.